Have you ever had a dream? A desire so deep that you could almost taste it? Our dreams define us. They drive us and give us purpose. And when we go for them, we can achieve great things. But we make up reasons that we can't. And then the world is missing something that only you could have created. This is my story, and I hope it helps you to write yours.
Okay, great. Ariella, thanks for joining us at the Israel Daily News. We have had your music on our show for years, and now you're working on something really big. So we're really excited to have you in studio today.
I'm so excited to be here.
Excellent. So let's get started by talking a little bit about your show that's up and coming. Tell us, when is the show happening? Tell us the name of the show, and what is your vision for your show? I understand it's going to have an 8-piece orchestra, which is pretty impressive. And you're a violinist, so tell us about that.
All right, well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. We've become friends over like the past couple of years. Like every time, you know, Shauna's like, do you by any chance have Hatikva? So I recorded it for you, right? It's like a
super special. That was super special.
Yeah, that was, I think, last year, right?
I think that was last year. There was something that came up, and I said, we need to end the podcast with Hatikva. And I said, well, of course Ariella has Hatikva. And you responded by, of course I should have Hatikva. And then you made it for us.
Yeah.
And I've been using it whenever I have a somber show or a show that has a real need for ending with Israel's national anthem. I use your violin stylings for that.
That's so cool. So I'm really happy that I get to be part of your show here. It's really exciting. On May 30th, I am premiering something very, very exciting. It's a concert that I call The Thousand Faces of a Hero. And basically what I wanted to do, and what this has been my baby for a while, like one of what I wanted to do is combine my three big loves. And my number one love is like really storytelling. I love reading. I love, since I'm a kid, I love fantasy stories. I love storytelling, and I love the art of storytelling. And I work also with brands and with musicians on like how they can better give a part, like how they can better give over the story of who they are, because we connect to stories. That's what we do. So there's a storytelling prototype called The Hero's Journey, which is put together by Joseph Campbell, which is basically 15 stages that we go through, like in order to tell a story, right? You have a hero, the hero has some kind of call to adventure, he ends up in a magical world, some kind of portal, some kind of mission, he wants to go back, right? You have to end up wanting to go back. Anyways, you follow this prototype when you want to write a hero story.
You know, when you said 15 stages, I was imagining myself jumping to 15 physical stages, but I guess that's the idea, right? That even in your life, your world has 15 different stages or more.
Right. Exactly. So what I've become very, very excited about and what I'm very into recently is self-development. The concept of going for your dreams, believing in something, going for something, and how are there people who go for their dreams? How are there people who go for those things? And how are there other people who are like, I can't, I'll do it when I lose 20 pounds, I'll do it when I, you know, when I have a little more experience, I have to have another degree before I can do that. You know, a lot of people, like, we make up these reasons in our minds that we can't go for them. And then we end up feeling really stuck. Right? We end up really feeling stuck when you're like, I can't do it. These are the reasons I can't do it. And then the reasons are just things that you've made up. So basically the whole concept of the hero's journey, we're all always on a hero's journey. Every time that we want to achieve something, every time that we want to create a new habit in our lives, every time that we want to go for something or we have a vision towards something, we're always on that journey. So the purpose, bringing it back to everything that's going on right now for all of us, is I think that a lot of people feel very stuck by the war. Right? You kind of look at the people who are, you know, the people are who are out fighting, and then you're like, wow, those are the heroes. They're the heroes. And the truth is, they, of course, the soldiers right now are the heroes of the national story. The people who saved people in Nova, they're the heroes of the national story. But every single one of us, every single person, and I'm not just saying just the big people, I'm saying every single one of us, we have our own story. We have our own situation. We have our own lives that we're going through, our own struggles. And it's all part of our own journey. We're all constantly in that hero's journey. So the idea of that of the show is that I do it in an entertaining way, also educational, also entertaining, also, you know, just kind of empowering.
So tell us what we can expect from the show itself.
Okay.
And you told us about the journey, about the self-development. What should people who show up to your show expect?
So, like I said before, that there's an 8-piece orchestra. And one of the cool skills that I was like, I want to have animations at certain points to kind of illustrate the things that we're going through, the things that we go through as all of us. And I was like, I really would love to have an animation here or some kind of like video.
And the animation will be on a big screen?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. The whole thing, the whole theater, like the whole stage is like one huge screen in back. And I actually learned how to do AI animation in order to bring this like concept together. It was really cool. I have to say that one of the things that like I've been thinking about recently a lot is that what is the goal of our lives is to go from being reactive, right, dealing with what comes in, to being creative, mm-hmm. which are kind of like the same word, but like creative is, that's where we want to be in mm-hmm. whatever it is that we're doing, whether you're an English teacher or you're trying to look for like, how can I bring my own spin to something? How can I bring my own self into this? So like, how can I bring my own brain, my own creativity, instead of being held back by all the fear and the doubt and the jealousy and the comparison?
So how are you going to get people that come to your show to overcome their fears and doubts across the board?
So like I said, so there's stages of the journey, right? So, I mean, there are lots of concepts that come back in self, like the whole world of like self-development, how we're battling constantly with like the villain in our mind, right? And one of the main things that most of us have to do is release and let go of like our need for perfection, our need for like controlling everything, because there's a lot of stuff we can't control that we would really love to control, but we can't. So basically I walk through a bunch of tools, like every stage of the journey, right? You need to surround yourself with friends. Like number one is surround yourself with a community that of people that will support you, right? That's like the sidekick, right? That's how that's represented in storytelling. And then hearing stories of people who have been through what you're going through, what you're trying to achieve, whatever it is. That's another thing. That's also that's a mentor in the story. And there's like a bunch of different stages that we connect to through storytelling. And I'm doing that through singing and playing and connecting it back to the music that we know from movies. So I'm planning on a really, really powerful experience for the people
wow.
that are going to go.
And where is this going to be located?
In Jerusalem, Kikara Musica, May 30th.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So this is going to be an outdoor experience.
No, it's in a theater. There's actually, they have their outdoor theater.
Okay.
Like that's kind of like that outdoor stage, but we're doing it inside. There's a gorgeous theater with like 300 seats. We got 300 seats for you guys.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, that is just going to be such a treat. And I would love to hear a little bit about this violin that you have right here. I you're holding it. I don't know if you know this about me. I don't think you know this about me, but I used to play violin.
No.
Yes.
Are you going to play?
No, I'm absolutely
Please?
Not going to play. No. No. It's been so many years since I've picked up my own violin, and I think it's a beautiful instrument. Tell us about your violin here. Where did you get it?
Okay, so I grew up in a very musical family. My grandfather was the head of the string department at the Eastman School of Music, which is in Rochester, New York. So that's the family that I was born into and that I grew up. So I kind of grew up under his eye, his watchful eye. He chose my teachers. Yeah, I would have to play for him every once in a while. It was a very terrifying experience. And this was one of his violins. It was, this was actually built for him by a violin builder called James Wimmer in Santa Barbara, California, where my grandfather worked at the Music Academy of the West. And, you know, I have actually a lot of violins. I have a huge, like, I have different electric violins that I use in a lot of my shows, or I have, you know, different sizes that I give to, like, students, or, you know, and people often give me violins that they're like, you help me figure out what to do with it. And I'm just like, okay, I'll pass it on to someone talented. But this is, you know, this is my baby. This is the one that, like, I do all my recordings on, and if I'm playing at home, I practice on this violin. And in the show itself, I've done a lot. People know me a lot because they've seen a lot of electric violins, but this show is mostly going to be acoustic, like, with the acoustic violin.
That is so exciting, and I'm glad that I asked you about that, especially, I'm a New Yorker. I went to school at SUNY Oswego.
Okay.
Which is not too far from Rochester.
Ah.
So I'm quite familiar with the area. And I was thinking, you know, should I ask her about the violin? It looks kind of like a special violin, so I'm really glad that I asked. Is your grandfather still with us today?
No. He passed away like 10 years ago.
Wow. So this is really a legacy that you're bringing forward. How do you think your grandfather would feel or experience you being a professional violinist in the Holy Land? In Eretz Yisrael, in the place that our forefathers have dreamed about coming for 2,000 years?
That's a really powerful question. It's a really powerful question. Actually, my grandfather's got an amazing story. He was born in Dubrovna, Russia, and his parents were actually jailed for Zionist activities in the 20s. And they...
I have chills.
Yeah,
I have chills.
Crazy. And... those of you who, like, don't know, the traditional, like, punishment for Zionist activities in Russia in the 20s was that they would be sent to Siberia, right? Basically, go off to your death, frozen tundra. And they had the incredible miracle happen that when they ended up in front of the judge, they ended up in front of an Armenian judge. And those of you who know the history of Armenia and the Armenian genocide know that this is somebody who knows what it's like to be a person without their homeland, to have been, you know, kicked out of their homeland, to, you know, not really have a home. And so their judge said, well, if they want to go there, why send them there? So they were, you know, two people in a very, very small number of people, very small number of people that the Russian government on their own dime sent to Israel in the 1920s. How crazy is that?
Whoa.
Right?
Yeah. Whoa, this is a crazy story.
Yeah, it's a crazy, crazy story. And so they ended up in Nesher. My great-grandfather was a doctor in Nesher, and I've actually met people on the train who knew him just randomly, because that's what happens when you live in Israel, right? You just end up, like, meeting random people, and I love strangers. It happens to be. I love strangers. If you ever are, like, you know, wherever you are, and you run into me, talk to me, I love strangers. I love hearing stories. I love people. And I just met somebody on the train. We ended up talking, and he's like, oh, you're Zeitlin. I grew up in Nesher. Like, no way, my great-grandfather. So that was just really, really cool. So back to my grandfather's story. So my grandfather ended up being a child prodigy here in the 1920s. And he was a child prodigy at the violin. Like, from the age of, you know, 6, he was already touring for the British Army, you know, playing for them. And he ended up becoming a spy. A spy.
Ariel, you're taking me on a journey.
I know, this is the craziest story ever.
All the stages.
Yeah,
going through all the stages.
All the stages, right? No, I love telling the stories of my family, because it's like, what? This is what you came from? So he became a spy for the Haganah, because he had perfect memory. Like, his memory was like, you know, what's the word?
Very sharp.
Perfect memory. Like, okay. Everything recall. Like, he would see, photographic memory, or whatever that is with your ears. And, so he would then report back, like, things that he would hear from these, like, upper British, you know, British Army people, and he was a spy for the State of Israel. So that was just pretty cool. And at the age of 11, he went to New York, to Juilliard, where he was one of the youngest students to ever get accepted to Juilliard. So that's my grandfather. That's the family that
that's
I come,
where you from. Come
from.
That's
where
lineage.
I come from. That's my lineage. So growing up, you know, I grew up in Baltimore, and so that's in my bones, in my blood, you know, like, Zionism was such an intense, like, it wasn't even something that, my family was not particularly Zionistic growing up. I didn't know that much about Israel. Like, you heard, you know, on the news, I grew up during the Intifada, But like, there's just like a calling. There's just a calling in my heart. And I think that like some, you know, people like Shauna, Shauna knows what the calling's like, right? She'd be like,
for
Maya.
Sure. For sure.
Yeah. It's just like, I have to be there. That's where I have to go. So, so what do I think that my grandfather would think that I live here? I think that my grandfather, with his mind would be blown, because in his day and age, they said you can be one thing. You have, you want to be a great violinist, then you be a great violinist, but you can't really do any Torah. You can't really like do Shabbat. Like those things that are part of like the Jewish culture, you can't do them if you want to achieve that. And I think that my grandfather, if he looked at me now, his mind would be blown that we don't live in a time that it's so black and white. We live in a time that people can decide for themselves what success is. People can decide what for themselves where they're going, where they want to go. Like, we live in a time that so many things are possible just by the power of the internet. Like, just like the power of the internet, the fact that I can put a video on the internet and thousands of people can see it. And then I'll run into somebody, I'll be in the airport, and people, are you Ariella Zeitlin? Like, it's the coolest thing. Like, we, and I don't spend money. I don't spend money to get in front of them. It's just because I decided I needed to share my heart, right? So we just live in a time that anything is possible. And that's my mission, is to get everybody to think that anything is possible.
That is so exciting. And one question that I have for you is, would you, I understand that your grandfather went to Juilliard, he went to New York. Now, a lot of musicians, and I interview a lot of musicians because I have a lot of music at the end of the Israel Daily News podcast, they are trying to make it here in Israel as musicians. What do you say for the people who think that Israel is not a place to be an artist or to be a musician, that you need to leave, you need to go to New York, you need to go to the West End in London? How do you respond to that?
I think that this is what we call a limiting belief in the world of self-development. I think that an artist who wants to get their music out really wants to get their music out. That the most important thing for them, the most important thing is understanding what are the aspects of my story that are important for me to share. I think, unfortunately, that music, it's a profession that's very egocentric, and that musicians are often very like, why aren't you listening to me? The musicians who go, how can I serve the people that I am going to perform for? The people, how can I bring more feeling to them? How can I bring them truth? How can I make them stronger? How can I share? How can I create space for the people who need that space, for somebody who listens to music, who's not a musician, somebody who tells me, I listen to your music every time that I need like to breathe. They tell me, I hear that all the time. You know, I hear that all the time. Like, I listen to your playlists on Spotify and it just gives me such a feeling. That is the space that musicians have and the power that they have. And instead of focusing on what can I give to the people who need what I have to give, they focus on, why aren't you listening to me more? Right? If you give, there are people who are in Timbuktu, in their little like huts, and they have an iPhone, and they come out and they dance a little bit, and people are like, oh, look at her, she's so happy, she's starving, and she's so happy. There is no reason that a musician who lives here, who is focused on giving, who is focused on how can I use my art to give to the people, that they can't be successful and that they can't create whatever it is that they want to create. I think that you can do that anywhere in the world, and I think that it's just like, oh, if I go there, then I'll be successful. It's not true. I'm just going to finish.
Yeah, yeah.
Plenty of musicians who have gone to New York, have gone to LA, they did not make it. Why? Because they're not really focused on who the audience is. They're focused on, I'm the best. I deserve. Nobody deserves anything. None of us deserve anything. People will come to you if they feel like they will receive strength from you.
Mm. So on that note, how do you balance between being confident in what you give and deciding what your message is and what you want to give, what your story is, what your truth is, and what the people need? How do you balance those two items? Because clearly those two things are important to you.
Right. So I think that it all really boils down to we're as a global population, as people who are going, they're trying to go for their dreams, right? You're operating from what we call a higher place, a higher self, from your higher self, right? You're not operating from anger, fear, jealousy, like all those things are very low, like vibrations, right? So I think that when you come to that place, then you also need to be operating, no matter what you're doing, is how can I serve? How can I serve the people? How can I serve them? Like if I consider myself to be something that, like, I'm a channel, right? My music is a certain type of channel. It's come through me. And I basically have a gift that, like, I'm giving to other people. Then it's all about how can I share it in a way that they'll connect to. It's really people can do the most bizarre things, and if they can nail the storytelling, people will come, right? You're like, oh, that's really interesting. He came from he came from this kind of family. He had this kind of lifetime. We need the stories. Mm-hmm. And I've been at so many classical concerts as, like, somebody who has my training, this classical training. And so many people are like, I don't understand, like, what's going on, right? I don't understand what's going on. This is too, and meanwhile, very academic. Anybody who's, like, involved in very academic circles, then you know that there's a little bit of, like, well, you don't need to know because it's only for, like, the really intelligent ones. And you don't think that's true. And I don't think that that's true. I think that people connect when we bring the story back to them. I think that that's what people connect to. You know that. You're a journalist.
I think that's what people connect to, and I also think that it's wise of you, and I also think it's very of our moment.
Yeah.
Perhaps in your grandfather's generation, the classical music was meant to be just enjoyed, and there was something that people didn't know that they could receive, right? Like the story of your grandfather. Right. Which now, because of Instagram, because of social media, because everyone wants to connect with people in a way that feels personal to them, the personal story really has become the number one.
Yeah.
And the art sometimes is, it's mixed in, or it could be that first the person came to you for your personal story and they stayed for the art, or they came for the art but they stayed for the personal story. So it could be, from my view, either one of those.
Totally.
Yeah. So, first of all, I don't know if you brought this violin here to do a little song,
sure.
But I think it would be awesome if you could play a little bit for us.
Sure.
Right here at the Israel Daily News.
All right. So at the concert, right? We're opening the concert.
We're opening the concert.
All right, we're opening up the concert. We're just going to play a little bit.
We're at Kikar HaMusika
in Jerusalem. And then, so I'm just going to very quickly kind of give you, like, a taste of how, like, this starts, right? So I've got the whole orchestra, right? This is all just acoustic, but... Have you ever had a dream? A desire so deep that you could almost taste it? Our dreams define us. They drive us and give us purpose. And when we go for them, we can achieve great things. But we find reasons that we can't. And then the world is missing something that only you could have created.
Talking about,
right,
that what the show will be like,
it's gonna be really big, it's gonna fill everybody up,
I think, who's sitting in the audience. That's really amazing. Thank you so much, Ariel.
Sure.
So why don't you just finish us off with telling us a little bit about what you really want people to experience at your concert. What's the feeling that you want people to take away?
So what my hope, my feeling and my desire, and what, like, I'm like, what is the main thing that I'm hoping that people will come away with, is one step towards the thing that they're dreaming about doing. One step. It's like, leave this show and like feel like empowered, and this is the one step I'm gonna take. I'm gonna, whatever that one step is, and we all know what that one step is. You know, like, I know I've been dreaming about doing this show for years, and I'm like, I just have to pull it. You know, I just have to take the one step at a time, because, you know, sometimes things can look so big, but if you take one step towards it, you suddenly feel like things start falling into place. So one step, that's what I'm hoping. And I'm hoping that people will walk away with a feeling of like being full and like just empowered to do what we're here to do.
Ariella, I almost cried so many times during this interview from just being really impassioned with the story of your grandfather, with the story of his journey here, with your music. And I love that little bite of the concert that you gave us. That was so exhilarating. And I'm so confident that whoever comes to the show on May 30th will have the experience that you want them to have. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for listening.